We are here at MLB Network, and I am sitting in an office, and I'm surrounded by a plethora of baseball cards dating back at least 25, 30 years. I'm also looking around the office, and it's just completely saturated with St. Louis Cardinal gear to the point where you'd think that if you worked in an environment in which you're supposed to be objective on a nightly basis, you would not show your colors this blatantly. And then the man who is sitting across the desk from me has got a headset on, the mobile headset on, and the headset, this is fantastic the way he's wearing it.
You're
because
right.
It is pushed back
right.
to the point where there is no way that headset is going to mess up one piece of hair of Greg Ancier.
Yes. And I am man enough to admit that is the case. I'm not going to mess up what I got going today. This is a good hair day. This is a good hair day.
Is how much is the hair a part of you and what you do?
Okay. It's actually, I feel like I'm bipolar. This is a confession. I show up to work wearing what? What do I wear when I show up to work?
A suit.
A suit, right? So my hair is done, right? In a suit. That is Greg Amsinger on MLB Network. I go home, and I'm what they call, and they being my kids, my two kids, hair down daddy. Okay, that means I'm not working that day. Hair down. No product in it. Look like Ashton Kutcher. Like it's in my eyes. Hair down daddy. No shaving. I barely bathe if I'm lucky. I'm wearing track suits. I am so cheesy at home. And I'm very laid back, more of an introvert. Two completely different people. Hair up, suit on, Greg MLB Network, away, chill, track suit, feeling comfy with my hair down daddy.
What's with the cards?
Here's the cards. When I first started MLB Network, I wanted to bring my passion of baseball to the building, and I fell in love with the game through baseball cards, not the St. Louis Cardinals all the time. That's what people think, and I do love the St. Louis Cardinals, no doubt about that. But for my job, I knew that I needed to build a relationship with you, the analyst, right? And there's nothing we have in common. I didn't play Major League Baseball. I don't know what that grind's like. You guys competed in world-class levels.
Uh-huh.
But you probably had a few baseball cards. I'm going to guess you had a few.
I grew up just much like you. Yeah, my room looked like this when I was 12.
Right.
Not 40, but 12.
Right. So my point is, you had baseball cards.
Yeah.
You know what that's like? Every one of you had baseball cards. So I've got all these baseball cards out, and these are all during the era of which you played. So when I first started working here, a guy like Joe McGrain would grab a stack and he'd be sitting there flipping through and be like, oh, Greg Jeffries, this guy, oh, I hit him 5 times in my career. I'm like, ooh, mental note, right? And then we had this trivia contest on MLB Tonight, and they would have a trivia question, and it wasn't sponsored, and there was no prize. So I'm thinking to myself, why are we having a trivia game when there is no prize? So I've got all these baseball cards. Maybe I'll give away 3 prizes. You pick one of the 3, and I'd have the director shoot all 3 baseball cards up close, and I'd make sure it was funny, right? So Joe McGrain would be on the set. I would cater to the trivia question to the answer would be something that only Joe would get. There's no way that Barry Larkin, who was on the set at the time working for us, would know the answer to this question. No way.
Uh-huh.
Only Joe McGrain would know. He gets it right. Joe, well done. Take a look at your – you get to pick one of these 3 prizes. And what do you think those 3 prizes were? A 1989 rookie Greg Jeffries card, a 1991 Greg Jeffries card, and a 1993 Greg Jeffries card. It was money. And to see his reaction, it was – oh, such good TV. It was such good TV.
Greg Jeffries of Sarah High School, also the high school of Barry Bonds, and the high school of what other famous male professional athlete?
Whew. John Elway.
Close. Tom Brady.
Tom Brady!
Absolutely.
Wow!
How about Lynn Swann went there, too?
Look at that. The new AD at USC, by the way.
Yes, you're
Isn't
right.
Isn't that crazy?
Let's get into you for a second. And now, you're You're a cartoon character, dude. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And you're talking about baseball cards, but you actually have a baseball card. And I don't think there's anything that would depict you better than your baseball card that you have that will go under when I post this podcast. I post an image with the podcast. The image is either going to be you that won't put your headset on because you don't want to mess up the hair.
Okay, no.
Or it's going to be the full face baseball card. Like, I mean, when you were young. Now I know you were an athlete. You grew up in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
At what point did you realize that you wanted to be a broadcaster?
Well, I was born as a thick child. I was very fat. I was sweaty fat. I had rolls, like, for real. And then I had flat feet, severely flat feet. Got it from my grandfather. So I had to wear special shoes growing up. It took forever for me to learn how to walk when I was a baby, right? So I had no balance. I have no arch in my feet. Think about this. No arch, flat feet. And I was fat. So I had to develop a personality to survive in Catholic school. I made fun of myself before anyone else could make fun of me. And, you know, the girls didn't look at me. They didn't pay any attention. I didn't expect them to. But I became the class clown. I became the guy that was all about the big personality. I never thought I was going to be an athlete. But because we all have this desire to want what we can't have, I loved sports. I loved it because I knew I couldn't play it. And then out of nowhere, my dad's 5'10", my mom's 5'9", I shoot up, I'm 6'5", boom, 7th grade. I'm like way tall, I'm 6'1 in 7th grade, 6'3 in 8th grade. And then I was like, what is this? And then I got to 6'5". And I'm, because I love the game of every game. I love basketball, I love baseball. I played football. I shouldn't have played football, but I love football. And I was the extension of a coach on the court, on the field, because I had been studying the game. I'd been watching the game, not thinking I could ever play it, but because I just loved watching it. Mm-hmm. So I had an IQ for all of these sports. Then I thought, okay, maybe I can play it now. I'm taller than everybody. Then a blowout, man. Knee replacement, awful knee injury in football. And then I went back to square one, and that was like, you know what, let's use the personality again. So I got in the theater, and that led me to broadcasting, believe it or not. The performance part of who I am, performing, getting people to laugh. You know, high school graduation, me and my best friend spoke to graduation. We had no business speaking at graduation. We're both C students. But we wrote a song, and it incorporated almost every teacher that was at the school and had funny stories about the kids at the school. And it was one of my favorite moments of my life. And there's video proof of this speech. We put sunglasses on, we turned around, and we had a buddy plug in his guitar. And we started playing. And it's a high school football stadium, so you got like 2,000 people there, right? And on the video camera, first off, we sat in the valedictorian seats right next to Jay Nixon, who was the speaker. We were like the first people. We were supposed to sit in the back of the stage, right? Because we were the kids that barely got a chance to speak. But we were, you know, they knew we were hams, so they were going to let us do it. So we sit. I look at Joe. I go, dude, let's sit right here. And he's like, no, dude, we're going to get in trouble. Like, it's already started. They're not going to make a scene. Let's just sit right here. We sat front row right by the podium next to Jay Nixon, the politician who, you know, is going to be the big speaker of our high school graduation. We're sitting front and center on camera. We stand up to speak. We turn around to put on sunglasses so our buddy who hooked up his electric guitar the night before to the football speakers, right, could go back and start playing the guitar. You see both principals sprinting towards the stage because they thought that we were going to moon the crowd. And we start singing this amazing song that we wrote. And to see the sea of our, you know, our fellow students go nuts, throw their caps. They're like standing O forever. It was like, it was like a drug. I was like, I gotta do something like this for the rest of my life. It's just too much fun.
So then you went to college in Missouri.
I was like the first in my family to go to college. So I didn't know I was supposed to go to college. Listen to this.
You can't wait. Hold on. So you have five brothers and a sister.
I'm one of seven kids. My mom was, she became a nurse in her 40s. My dad is a welder, worked in a factory. Neither one of them went to college out of high school. So I didn't know I was supposed to go to college. No one talked to me about that. So as I'm walking to the stage to speak at high school graduation, the woman that's going to introduce me, the guidance counselor goes, Greg, what school are you going to next year? And I go, what are you talking about? And she's like, what college are you going to next year? I'm like, I don't know. You haven't committed to a college? No, I didn't know I was supposed to. She's like, oh, I'm just going to write down the community college then. You can't speak at a high school graduation and not go to college. I'm like, I guess I'll go to college next year. So I went to community college for a semester. And you know what I saw there? And this is no offense to community colleges, but this is just my community college that I went to, St. Charles County Community College. I went to for one semester right out of high school. I saw all the kids from the other high schools, all the other public high schools that were as big a partiers as I was. Like all the hardcore partiers from all the different regional schools were in my class.
So you were a big partier in high school.
Huge. And I was like, whoa, man, I gotta button this up. I gotta get good grades. Got great grades in community college, was there for one semester, and then I got into the school I went to, Lindenwood University, which is right outside of St. Louis.
Now, is Lindenwood known for their media program?
They have a great radio station. Great radio station. And they've produced a lot of local talent along the way that stay in St. Louis. Dan McLaughlin, the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, went to Lindenwood. You got a TV voice of the Cardinals. It's not a huge national powerhouse, but it had a great, at the time, 25,000 watt FM radio station.
Sure.
So I could be a DJ, right? So that's why I went there, so I could be on the radio. And I love radio, man.
It's what kind of music were you playing?
New Adult Contemporary. The best hits, 89.1 FM, KCLC, The Connection. The latest from Kenny G. Oh, yeah. I had Casey Kasem, Top 40, was my favorite growing up.
I love Casey. Yeah, I'm with you.
So I love doing, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Love that stuff.
So that was your first job then in the broadcasting world?
College, yeah. Okay. So it's just funny. You could sign up for on-air shifts. And I looked at the schedule, and no one's signing up for morning shows. And it's a three-hour show. And I'm like, why is it no one signing up for a morning show? They're like, Greg, it's from 5 a.m. It's from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. before you go to class. Nobody, we can't get kids to do it. We have to, like, force it. I go, I'll do all of them. They're like, what? I'm like, 5 days a week. I'll just be the morning show guy. It'll be my own morning show. If you want to do that, loved it. Showed up. I would sleep 3 hours a night. I'm in college. I'll sleep when I'm dead. That's my mantra, by the way. I'll sleep when I'm dead. And I was doing the morning show, man. I loved it. It was 3 hours. And now here I am, polar opposite schedule, doing 3 hours.
So after the FM.
I just realized that, by the way.
That it's completely changed, but in reverse.
It's the same. It's the same. It's psycho. The same. I'm a psycho. That's what it is.
What then you got into a 2-year producer stint with the Cardinals?
Yeah, yeah. Randy Carricker was my media mentor. Was working at Camo X Radio, which is a powerhouse radio station in St. Louis. They had the radio rights to the Cardinal Baseball Network. And he, through my contacts, he also went to Lindenwood. I asked him if I could be an intern. And I just never left Bernsey. I was like, I didn't make any money. I was still working as a produce clerk at a grocery store, right? But I was just at the radio station in downtown St. Louis every day. I didn't want to leave. So they eventually just gave me a job. And I did that job as a board op for a while. And some of my gigs were, hey, you're going to be the board operator on the other side of the glass for tonight's evening special with Bob Costas.
Huh.
So Bob Costas, who lived in St. Louis at the time year-round, would come in with Bruce Kornblatt, who's working for us now, running our features department. That was his personal producer. And Bob remembered my name after he met me at the age of 19.
Was he good to you?
Unbelievable. And he would sit on the other side of the glass. And I was used to calling, like, Bernie Federko, Tony La Russa, Tom Brunansky, you know, like local St. Louis sports figures. Here's like Tony La Russa's list. It's, Bart Giamatti, or he was actually passed away by the time. Oh, Bud Selig. Okay. President Jimmy Carter. Wow. Like, these are the people I'm calling for Bob Costas' once-a-month evening special. It was, like, unbelievable radio.
Was it a syndicated national show?
No, but it
was a local St. Louis show.
It's a local St. Louis show, but what you have and to keep in mind is,
you're calling Jimmy Carter.
Think about that. His home phone number. This is Bob Costas' life. And at the age of 19, I'm like, I can't imagine. Like, these are the guests he can pull.
Yeah.
So after 7 o'clock at night, though, KMOX was, like, 50,000 watts.
Yeah, sure.
But it went throughout the entire Midwest. That's why Cardinal baseball is more than just St. Louis. There are people in Oklahoma. There are people in Nashville.
Yeah.
There are people in Wyoming. Because back in the old days, Stan the Man was a national icon because all the farmers could tune their radio in and get KMOX
yeah.
late night and listen to Jack Buck or Harry Carey describe Stan the Man music.
Sure.
So it was a powerful radio station in that sense, but that's where, you know, I got a chance to cut my teeth in broadcasting.
So you meet Bob. Now, obviously, Bob works here at the network as well.
Right.
Does he remember you?
It's funny you say that. I was like, hey, first time I saw him here, he walks up, he goes, hey, Greg, Bob Costas, good to meet you. He didn't remember it was the same guy, because you have to understand, it's not his fault. I had wacky hair, sideburns down to my lip. I had a soul patch. I was just a total, like, college weirdo.
When did you lose your fat rolls?
Oh, I lost them in 7th grade. I got skinny. I had a real skinny, awkward stage. I eventually grew into, like, my body probably junior year, senior year. Yeah. But, yeah, he I reminded him, hey, man, I was your producer. I didn't say board op. I go, I was your producer back when I was 19 years old at KMYX. And Bob goes, huh, I'm going to guess I produced myself that night. I'm like, you're right, you did.
Okay, so you go, you finish college, and you're the inaugural voice of the River City Renegades?
Yeah, that's during college.
That was during college.
It was, I mean, junior year of college.
An indoor professional football organization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was that? Cool. Was it arena football?
It was arena football.
Oh, it was.
But it was like, think about like independent baseball for Major League Baseball, what independent ball is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this was for arena football. So it was kind of like, so
it wasn't really arena football.
it's indoor football, but it's just like a bunch of local college football players that couldn't make it to the league. So there was like a draw there. Corby Jones. Dual threat quarterback, number 7 for the Missouri Tigers. Remember the Nebraska-Missouri game, the kickball in the end zone? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I think it was Scott Frost was the quarterback for Nebraska, number 1. Tom Osborne, the head coach. And
I do remember that. I know exactly
Davidson was the receiver, and he kicked the ball up and went to it. Yeah. So anyway, he was the quarterback of that Missouri team, almost knocked them off. And he was a local superstar. He was the quarterback of the River City Renegades. So they were looking for a play-by-play guy. They brought me in to be the analyst, believe it or not, because they knew I was doing local radio. And they thought, there were people saying that there was a kid at Littlewood that had some high hopes. They thought that I could make it. So they brought me in to be like the analyst for this other guy. I forget his name. The other guy didn't have a lot of success doing play-by-play. So they just go, why don't we make a switch? And I did play-by-play.
And the other guy became the analyst?
Yeah, he became the analyst, yes.
So after Littlewood, CBS Sports Network.
Yeah. CBS TV is what it was called originally.
So that's where you became you.
That was the big break. Yeah, I was doing. I went to Terre Haute, Indiana for 2 years. Started off doing news because I had a theory, Bernsey. At that time, local sports, they were looking for women to do sports. They couldn't find enough women to do sports. That's where the industry was going. So I decided where everyone goes one direction, I go the other. I was like, okay. Here I am, a tall white dude that wants to do sports on TV. I'm a dime a dozen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say I want to do news because they couldn't find athletic, healthy-looking men who want to do news out of college. I just need to get in the door. That's all I needed. And coming from Lindenwood, it was hard because it's not a powerhouse. It's not Syracuse. So I had a news director who was going to let me be the weekend news anchor and weekday news reporter. And that's what I did.
In Terre Haute.
I did that for like 5 months. She gutted the sports department, got rid of the 2 local sports guys. I had made me the sports director because she knew I liked sports. And I'm telling you, it was crazy. I got hate from everyone in the market, but I didn't care. I was like, I was there for 2 years.
How big is the market in Terre Haute, Indiana?
Market 146. Out of 200 and some odd, like 215 markets, it was market 146. So there I am in Terre Haute. I'm thinking, hopefully, I get a job in Louisville, Kentucky. That's where I was gunning for, right? It's market 50. That's a huge jump. And the end game here at Bernsey is to work in St. Louis again. That's what I want. That's market 25 at the time. I'm being offered a weekend sports gig. Louisville, Kentucky, we looked at apartments. Out of nowhere, I get an email from a talent coordinator for CSTV, College Sports Television. Hey, heard some rumblings about your performance in Terre Haute. We'd like to have you come out to New York City and audition for our new startup network. It's like, you can't script that. It's like, that's a fluke. I thought he was joking. So I do it. I fly out to New York. I do an hour-long show, and listen to who I'm on the air with. It's a soft launch, so they haven't gone national yet. They're just trying to figure out who their honor talent will be for college sports television.
This was before CBS picked them up?
Before CBS bought CSTV.
Okay.
My co-host was Amber Theo Harris.
Shut up.
For real.
Have we gone over this?
No. Amber Theo Harris.
I know Amber really well.
Amber Theo Harris is the co-host. And our college baseball analyst is Jim Laritz. And Greg Amsinger. The three of us did an hour-long show. And
College baseball?
On college baseball. Yeah.
And that was the launch of the network?
They'd already done some soft launch shows. Amber Theo Harris was going to get the gig. They told me, we're looking for a guy that can go with her because she's going to be one of the anchors. And for some reason, the two of us, I love her to death. She's awesome on TV.
Great.
I think she does great work on NFL Network.
Great.
But the shows were just choppy. I think it's because I'm like, you've seen, you work with me. I don't read anything. An ad-libber.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do a show that's scripted with someone that doesn't write scripts.
Yeah.
So it was weird for Amber, and I was just doing my thing. I went winging it. You know, it's what I do. And they ended up changing, and I get offered the job. Jim Laritz doesn't work for CSTV, and Amber Theo Harris doesn't work for CSTV. She ends up getting a job in Baltimore.
In Baltimore. That's where I met Amber.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how it all started in national TV for me, man.
Unbelievable. So there you are now. So now, when does College Sports Network become the CBS Sports Network?
CEO Tony Petitti of CBS Sports. Sure. He's the executive producer of CBS Sports.
Of CBS Sports, big wig.
They tell him, we're buying CSTV, and you are going to overlook, you're going to run CSTV. So he immediately renamed it CBS College Sports Network.
Yeah.
They got rid of a ton of people overnight. Like, it was a bloodbath. They had to fire a lot of people. Clean house. You put CBS employees in the right positions. I was there for a total of 5.5 years. While I was there, Tony Petitti got a chance to see me do live looks of college basketball games during the NCAA tournament. We did MLB Tonight for the NCAA tournament, basically. And I'd be on for 7 hours that first week. I'd be 7 straight hours with a different coach. Different coach would be my analyst. They just keep bringing him in. And when he left to be the CEO of MLB Network, he remembered that I could do marathon television, where it's on a whim, react on the fly, that kind of thing. So thankfully, Tony Petitti is the reason why I'm here.
That was your obviously big break. So when they started MLB Network, Tony brought
me. Yeah, for real.
What's the difference between doing games that were, say, involved with basketball in the NCAA tournament as opposed to what we do on a nightly basis here?
You know, what we do on a nightly basis here is hardcore analysis on the fly.
Yeah.
What makes our show the best in sports TV is everyone likes to compare our show to Strike Zone. And I get that. Not Strike Zone, Red Zone on NFL Network. And I get that. And I understand why there are comparisons. But number one, we were the first one to do it. So they're copying us. Secondly, it's a host, no analyst. My number one priority while I'm doing all these updates and live looks are the two guys to my left, you and Dan Plesak tonight. You guys are my number one priority. If you're not having fun, if you, either one of you, don't feel like you're the star of the show, bad show. Show sucks. So, yeah, I got to get to all this stuff. I got to know who I'm talking about. And, yeah, we got to do play-by-play on a whim. I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about you two guys having a good time. And if you two guys are having a good time, America is loving the show, bro. So our show is really Red Zone mixed with Fox NFL Sunday, which is a rehearsed, huge national pregame show. Scripted, great analysis with big personalities, but it's all been pre-planned, man. All pre-planned, all pre-lit, all pre-thought of, all planned. We are doing it on the fly, and yet it looks amazing. As I sit here and talk to you, I got Harold Reynolds and Bill Ripken in Studio 42 right now. I'm watching this. It's a great demo. It's live. It's on the fly. No one does this stuff. So it's different, man. It's different than what I did at CSTV in college sports. It is studio TV at its highest level. I don't think we'll ever see a format that pushes the talents of broadcasters more than MLB Tonight.
Of all the shows that you've done here, is there a favorite one?
Other than MLB Tonight?
Of all the shows, the individual shows that you've done here, is there one that sticks out? I mean, maybe go back to 2011.
That's a great call.
The night when it was just mayhem.
Yeah.
And
Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah, that was it.
That was the greatest night of baseball in my life. Greatest night of baseball in my life. I'll never forget that. That was a night where I was like, there's magic in the studio. Like, there's something special. Dan and Harold going crazy. There are a couple things that stand out. It's a great question. I also have, on the front of my mind, the day that I go back to as I know this network will be super successful forever. And that is hosting the draft. We took over the draft, and it's 2009, and we cram it in Studio 42, and the draft has always been an awkward thing for Major League Baseball. And we're hoping to get one kid to come in to get drafted. We couldn't get anybody to come. Because back then, you know, you're giving away leverage if you act excited that you got drafted. Sure. Because you might want to go play college baseball at UCLA. You're not going to sign. If the money's right, maybe. But if you're standing on up at the podium putting a jersey on next to the commissioner, doesn't look like you're going to college, right?
Yeah.
There was one kid that we talked into coming. And it's a local kid. And he's like, I'll come. And he wasn't getting drafted. We got one kid. We've been showing him all night. It's 2009. First year we're covering the draft. I'm like, oh my gosh, this kid's not going to get drafted. He's the only one here. MLB Network's going to tank. This is terrible. I'm live hosting the show. We thought he was going to get drafted by the Angels. They had two back-to-back picks. But we thought the Angels' first pick was going to be a high school pitcher. Instead, it's a high school outfielder, righty-righty, five-tool guy. And we're like, there's no way they're going to draft this kid now.
Brandon Gritchick.
Yep. And the kid that got drafted, that was from Jersey, the first kid to show up at MLB Network Studios for the draft, Mike Trout got popped. Mike Trout is the first player to be in Studio 42 for the draft. First player to have the guts to come. I'm sorry, dude. That gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Mike Trout's the best player in the game.
Uh-huh.
MLB Network is the best sports channel in the game. We've grown together. It's a beautiful thing.
That is incredible. Now, when on a nightly basis, as you're bouncing around between the games, one game after another, here to here to here. Ultimately, how much input do you have to where we go? How did that as far
well,
as
you far, answer that question, bro?
I mean, come you on. Know how it is. I mean, we're yelling and screaming at TVs and stuff.
Yeah,
but just basically for you.
Oh, let me ask you this question: how do you think I host the show?
On the fly, just like you said, unscripted. It's incredible to watch. It's something that needs to be perfected. That's why it's very difficult for anybody to come in here and try to do what you guys do. Now, at the same time, you know, basically our role as an analyst, it's the most difficult thing, obviously, is following 30 teams.
Right.
That's where it can be tough. And if you have, say, out-of-towners that are coming in and out of town, and if you're not keeping up to date on it,
it's tough.
You know that.
It's brutal.
You get exposed in a hurry.
Yeah.
Exposed in a hurry. Is this next generation baseball, though, how we watch it now.
Yeah.
I kind of believe that, right?
We're changing the game, man. We're changing the game. Think about it. The media is going digital, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean – everyone thinks that's bad for cable channels. Oh, no, what's ESPN going to do? What's MLB Network going to do? Whoa. If it's going digital, that means there are more platforms for you to soak in the content. What does that mean? That means you're not restrained to a couch with your family to all agree on one show to watch on that one device that's hanging on the wall, which is the TV. It means you're watching on your phone. It means you're all sitting together in the living room watching different content on your phones, mm-hmm. on your tablets. Mm-hmm. So my point is there's an even larger appetite for content, and we're content makers, man. We're content makers. So it's good to be in this business right now. This is the day and age where you can cash money to be in the business right now. It's a great thing. And we got Lou Baricelli knocking on the door.
Yeah, we'll be there right in a minute, Lou. Jeez. How many times we stuck around here? You know, Lou. All the phone interviews I've done for him over the years.
Well,
he's now barging out my water.
Do you know what they want, though? I've got a crew here from Cardinal Magazine.
Yeah. We'll be right out, Lou. We'll be right there, Lou. So, ultimately, the Greg Amsinger show, where does it go from here?
You know what? I don't ever want to have the Greg Amsinger show. I don't. I want to have MLB Tonight. I want to hide behind this amazing format, this amazing machine. I want to hide my name behind a show that I would have been obsessed with when I was 10 years old. Are you kidding me? I would not go to bed until it was 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern. until that show was over. Like, I would love watching the show that we do every night as a kid. So I don't want the stress of ratings and have the show be all about me. I don't care about that, dude. I'm not in the game.
But you've had opportunities. Yeah. Recently. An opportunity to take a big gig that would get more eyeballs on you than this.
Yeah.
And you turned it down.
Turned it down. Yeah. You know what? I mean, I said this to the guy that was interviewing me for Cardinal Magazine. 3 weeks before the season started, that's when I'm like, God, I have the best job in the world because I miss hanging out with you. I miss hanging out with Plesak. I miss hanging out with Harold. I miss my friends, Chinch, our producer, Rowan Beck, our producer. I miss the adrenaline of doing the show. I miss the show. So that's when you know you're in the right spot, man. When you love your life. Dude, I can't be happier than I am right now. I don't need to go be on a show that gets 5 million viewers every night. I don't need that. I don't need that. I love the obscurity of what I do. If you love baseball, then you'll watch, and you might know who I am. But if you don't, I don't care. I wasn't in the game to be a multi-millionaire. That's not why I'm doing this. My agent might not like hearing me say that. I want to be happy. You can't put a price tag on that, bro. And I am so happy working here. I'm smiling every night.
Quick advice to a young kid that wants to become a broadcaster.
Find the spot. Find your niche. Look, there's a lot of failure in broadcasting. It's a lot like playing sports, right? You got to deal with failure. You got to deal with people telling you you're not good enough. But go out. Imagine that you've got one show left. Every show is your last show. Go out doing it your way. Go out being who you think you wanted to be as a broadcaster when you got into this business. Don't try to be Greg Amsinger because you'll suck. Don't try to be Eric Burns because it won't work. Try to be who you are. And at the end of the day, are you interesting? And if you're interesting, you're going to be good on TV.
Greg Amsinger, you've come a long way since the River City
Renegades.
Yeah, man. Thanks, buddy.
You got it, dude.